definition, because it's a certain halachic category where you don't touch the gozis unless you're going to be saving your life. The gozis is near the throes of death. That is the simplest definition. We need a better definition. We need a practical definition. Because then we have to decide, like I told you a story about my experience with that pancreatic cancer patient that I was thrust into my very first day out. Horrible. I was mom, she goes, listen, I knew enough not to do the EKG, which I was right about. So there's no point in EKG if you're not using it to get somebody out of an arrhythmia or something. If you're doing the EKG just to declare them dead, wait till they're dead. Then you need EKG. Does that make sense? Anyway, this should bring us to ending my estimates that we will end all of the topics of your Aveda at the latest December 9th. Probably December 7th, but possibly if we have enough questions, we'll make it December 9th. The last year Aveda topic. Right? We're finishing what we started the other day. We're going to do end-of-life decisions. Right? This is very important for everybody. Unfortunately, it's nothing to do with being a doctor. This is, I would say, the single biggest question, most often asked questions I get from people in the world is end-of-life decisions. Most frequently dealt with issue, unfortunately, right? Because everybody has to deal with it. So we're going to do that. Hopefully, we'll start today, finish it up Wednesday. And then the following Monday, Wednesday, maybe even by Monday, because they're short topics, we'll just do Koses and Kriya, the Makom Yisrael. That will leave us the week of the 14th as like wide open for either starting our Hayim or study week. That would be nice, right? Because the final's not going to be a joke. Meaning, not that the other one was. I took it seriously. I hope you guys even did. But this final is going to be on everything, right? Multiple choice or true and false. So it's easy to grade it. And
everything? Or only on work you cover?
Cumulative. That's the bad news. Good news?
No review.
Open notes.
Okay? Meaning, have it.
It means my questions will be of a nature where I'm interested in saying, are they understanding what I'm saying? Can they assimilate what I'm saying and put it into practical use? Every question is going to be practical question.
Like the questions from me.
Yeah, like those, but geared towards a single answer.
Can we comment on the multiple choice answers?
Do you have a problem with them?
Yeah.
I'm sure you will. No, you may.
Open the chorus?
Huh?
Open the chorus?
Yes, that's what I said, open the chorus.
So
that's good, right?
How much time?
I already talked to you on that official final date. The final is on December 21st at 11:30.
3 trials.
Which means, I guess, it goes from 11:30 until 11:30.
Are we going to review from the whole year? I mean, whole semester?
Sure.
Are we going to review in the class?
You want to do that during that week? We didn't get too far last time we tried it, but we could do that. We can do that. So on that, the sooner we get it done, then the sooner we'll start to review. So we might have 3-4 days to review. Okay, so let's get going so we get some of it. Alright? So,
are we going to finish?
Hopefully, if we can finish this up, we can start up the division. I don't know if we will, but let's say. I like it that we have a lot of open discussion, which is good. It's not really good. Okay, this should be the last page of that handout. We were talking about assuming you hold l'chumra on brain death. So now we're discussing something that is really, really a critical question. Even if you hold l'chumra on brain death, might you still allow for your patients or someone you know to accept the harm? Or is it somehow the way Rabbi Tendler puts it and Rabbi Mark Engel and others, is it's just as much a gorim b'tzicha as if you pull the trigger yourself. They think it's hypocritical. They think it's really a big no. So we started to analyze that. We said that there's really two elements to the questions that we're focusing on. You knew that the Israeli Rabbanut brought in as a raya that Rav Moshe agreed with them about brain death the fact that he allowed people to receive heart transplants. So our first dichotomy is the opening question, which is, no, it's not necessarily true. Just because you allow, we would maintain that Rav Moshe would allow the acceptance of a heart, despite the fact that he would consider it murder to take out one. So that was the first level of the question. But then the question got thicker when we saw Rav Shlomo Zalman's approach. He really is the one that's the most difficult to understand. And that is that he says, you cannot accept in Eretz Yisrael, but you can't put signs. Where is there room to make such a split? In other words, obviously you'd say, what's the difference whatever we talk about Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz Haaretz? The split we're really making is the split between Rov Jew and Rov not Jew. Why should that make a difference? Murdering is totally usher in either context, right? So why should that in any way be different? And that's going to be part two of what we need to understand. So we started to look through the sugya. We started very, very basic. We started with Gemara Sanhedrin, where we mentioned quickly that we know that really, if you look at the question as a very basic question, am I allowed to save my life through the life of another person, by sacrificing the life of another person? So we said, oh, that's pashut, that's not true. Pashut, that is awesome. Why is it pashut, that is awesome? Because we know that it's true we save a chayim about every mitzvah, but one of the exceptions is, tzicha, you have to die, yaharet no yavor. Doesn't that answer our question right off the bat? So we said, oh, not so fast. Not so fast. Because when it comes to avodah zarah, when it comes to kilui raos, so the Torah tells me, black and white, exceptions, you will never be able to do these avodahs at the expense of your life. You have to give up your life. However, when it came to tzicha, the Gemara says it's a svarah. It's not a gzeiras hakasa. So, what's the svarah? So we saw, you have to be very careful, the Gemara doesn't waste words. The Gemara gives you a very, very good deal, and it gives you the svarah. The svarah works like this. It says, well, the way Rashi explained it, who remembers how Rashi explained it? Anyone remember? This is very important. This is definitely the kind of thing I
wish. Who says that you're a better
one? No, that's part two. First, Rashi explains the svarah very simply. He says,
not a math.
Right, it's a matter of math. In other words, we want to...
better one than...
Exactly. In other words, if you die and don't kill, one Jewish soul is lost. If you kill, then there's a Jewish soul lost, so that equals that down. And the major aveira is taking place. So better to just, that's the real svarah. That's the mikra, that's the svarah. But the Gemara throws in something else that you better realize is part of the svarah. There's another additional element to the svarah. That is, miyamar de damek samek tverek. Who says your blood is flowing better than his blood? So we said, well, what does that mean exactly? Because it's going to be very important in terms of what I would have said. If you're going to do svaras, right? Before we get to miyamar, I would have said like this to Rashi. I said, Rashi, really? Well, what if I'm like the greatest Jew in the world? What if I'm the gadol ador and he's totally not from? He's Jewish, but he's not from. So we're going to still say that that's an equal equation? His life for my life, plus an avera? How about all the mitzvahs I'm going to do and all the averas he's going to do? Doesn't that get into the cheshbon at all? Right? So, or maybe like this. I have been given, somebody's been given by the doctor 2 months to live. This person's likely to live another 120 years. You're going to say that's equal? So we say, niyamar, the donor samachtvet. So what does that mean? So Rashi already takes a stand on this. Because there's two possibilities as to what it means. It either means the qualitative value of the person's neshama, that is what we're talking about. Who says that you're really a firmer guy? Sure, on the outside, you look like you're the guy behind the door. But how do we know what you're doing behind closed doors? No, this guy looks like he's a total not firm person, but who knows? Based on his mitzvahs, based on what situation he was born into, and what he's accomplished with his life, right? The fact that he's a good person, maybe Hashem looks at that as a greater accomplishment. And this really, by the way, as an aside, this is, in my view, this is true Jewish theology. That's how Jews look at the value of a person and what Sechar B'Chodesh awaits a person. It really has to do with, you know, the truth. What you're really coming from and where you've gone. That's the Cheshbon, right? Whatever situation you were born into, wherever you ended up, that's what Hashem's judging you. So, therefore, we can never know. So, if that's true, then, end of story, according to Rashi, the Gemara is telling me, you don't know his value versus his value. In terms of the other issue, the viability, so Rashi would say, one moment of life has infinite value. And once you say that, a moment of life has infinite value, then the math is easy. Infinity always equals infinity. You're never going to go more than infinity. Infinity and 1 month is the same as infinity plus 120 years. So, if that's the truth, that's what the Gemara is telling me, the Yama, the Dama Samech Tvei is just about how good a person you are, and that you'll never know. So therefore, at the end of the day, the Svara will hold up under all conditions, and even if this guy's a trait, but he's about to die within 3 days, 3 moments, you still can't take his life for yours. Because it's infinitely valuable in terms of its biological value. Comes along, certainly showing them, and they seem not to learn them. Right? That's what we saw on the next page. We saw the Mi'iri takes the argument to its natural conclusion. He brings in these other sukkahs, but he ends up saying, no, as a matter of fact, if it's a choice between, at least under the conditions that he discusses, which is somebody's coming into a, you're all huddled in a room, and here's the scenario. You're visiting your unfortunate co-worker. We'll make it impersonal as possible, right? Not a friend, but you're visiting your co-worker who's dying of some disease, right? And he's about to die, for sure, the doctors tell you, in the next week. Comes along some crazy terrorist, and he says, comes to our room, he sees a bunch of Jews in the room, and he says, all right, give me one guy from that room, and I'll spare the rest of you. If you don't, you're dead. So what's the right thing to do? So if biological viability means nothing, everyone's got to die. Because that's normally the din. Right? The normal din is, if you're all healthy, for sure, you don't give up, just to save the rabbin, you don't give up one nefesh misur. That's the din. But does it make a difference that one of them is going to be dying within a week? According to the Mi'iri, it certainly does. Right? So the Mi'iri says, he's willing to say that a trait for someone like this is more expendable. The way that Tiferes Yisrael put it, he quotes our Gemara, he says, that's Yomet Azamek Samech Tvei. He says, look, the guy who's a traitor, his blood is not flowing as well as the rest of them. So therefore, that extra, the way he's learning it, the way they're all learning it, is that the Gemara is telling me purposefully this second line to teach me this big chiddush that will let you sacrifice a non-viable life for your fully viable life. But that would be okay. Right? Now this thing comes up in other contexts. Like, there's one context where it's clearly this way. By an ubar, by a fetus, right? There's two mahalos to how a fetus works. Why we're allowed to abort the fetus to save the mother, right? That's a given, right? One mahal is to save because it's not really a full neshama, right? This is like related to them.
Yeah.
All right, but we said so. We see the Mi'iri, the Tiferes Yisrael, the Minchas Chinuch says a similar idea. All these people say it. However, we learned that most people don't agree with that. Most people go with the infinite value approach, which is, no, every moment of life is of infinite value. You don't get to say these biological equations again, right? Now, they sought out Uriah from the story of Ula, right? Remember Ula? Talked about that last time. Everybody remembers Ula. Ula was walking around with two crazy guys, one killed the other guy, and then he finished them off. So why are these cases different? What's the flaw in the reasoning? So we saw a big chiluk that some people had trouble with, right? Didn't buy it. But it's definitely... Here's where you see... Depending on your attitude, right? This is not a
how good day.
This is bad enough. I'll make a point. If you come at Chazal, right, in a non-cynical way, you realize from learning enough that Chazal had incredible insight into everything, right? Which I've come to learn in an objective way, right? And it's what Mechazik Mayimuna on a daily basis is learning and hearing what they have to say about different issues. Right, so here's one that I think is incredible. I never would have thought to make a chiluk. I would have thought like you, right? I wouldn't make a chiluk between somebody who has a gun to his head and is forced to make a decision versus somebody who's going to die from some other natural reason, right? And is forced to make a decision. I would have personally not been machal, just because I'm too superficial a thinker, me. But once Chazal pointed it out, it really appeals to me that there's a tremendous difference between the guy who's saying, all right, I'll kill him because you have a gun to my head. And the guy who is ill on his own through Mina Shamayim and then decides to save his life through killing another person. To me, one decision is made by Ratzo and one is by Omis. And that's a chiluk that's accepted in many contexts of Halacha and is thrown in here by the major poskim to say that don't bring me the Meiri, don't bring me the Tiferes Yisrael, don't bring me the Minchas Chinuch. They're talking about cases of Onis. The only reason they're saying they're willing to say kill the treifa to save the live Jew or the healthy Jew is because that's onus. But it's much different if the decision is being made by Ratzon. Right? Okay. So you can either intuit, feel that type of chiluk, Well, you don't, but personally I do. Personally, I really do. I'm very comfortable with that. But there's a big difference. Then we started to talk of, okay, so we got our background. We know that straight up, to make a decision to actively kill another person, probably like, for example, if the way the system worked of transplants was that, and here's new stuff, so get rid of this. Everything was new up till then, right? Person comes, if the way transplants worked, person comes and says, okay, well, by the way, sometimes it does work this way, unfortunately. I'm a very rich person. I'm a very rich person. That's it. So I can afford that if I needed a heart, I'm going to seek out a donor and kill him. You know, I'll hire somebody if I don't want to do it myself. Or I'll do it myself. And I'll kill him because, after all, you know, he's a trefa or something, right? Clearly, we paskin that that's out of the question. You cannot actively kill a trefa to save your life, no matter how rich you are, no matter how good you are with a gun. It doesn't make a difference. Okay. That's not our question. Because if that was the situation, everybody would agree. Everybody agree you can't accept the heart transplant under those conditions. What is the truth? So we started to talk about it, and now I want to finish up. We started to talk about how does the transplant system really work? So it works as follows. Everyone take out that page.
Can I have a quick question?
Yeah.
Can a person who wants to donate something, like, I will die.
Designate somebody?
Yes.
Oh, so good. So in other words, does it make a difference if the guy's masculine, right? So Cecilia has discussed this. He says, he writes in his living will, when I become a trefa, right, or if I'm dying and I'm going to die, I am willing to, let's say I don't hold my brain down. I don't care. I'm willing to give up my life, which is only moments or days, so that somebody can live. Should that change this whole cheshbon? So the Bosom is saying no. Because no one has a right to do that. No one has a right. You're not the baal and you're a goof inside when time's up. You know, people have a problem giving up power, you know, giving up control. This is one area where it's really manifest. And where I've been in debates. I remember I once did a talk during one of the Medical Ethics Society things. Right? Where the topic was assisted suicide. And I thought it was a joke, the topic that I was given, assisted suicide. First of all, it was one of my least favorite topics. I did it anyway. I was a team player. But I'm saying, this is who's going to argue about this? And wow, was I wrong? There was a strong opposition to what I was saying. Mainly because those are people that they don't recognize the simple cloud, which I maintain, and of course it's a Jewish cloud, that is, we do not have that type of control over our own bodies to decide when we live or die. It's up to God when we live or die. You cannot make that decision. It's just not, it's not a question, oh, I'll die today, I'll die tomorrow. That is in God's hands only. That's like a given axiom of Judaism. But what I was very happy to find out at this moment is most of the people were from, I had changed my whole talk from a Torah talk to a more general talk, but that was okay because it was a lot of fun, if you're into those things, debating it out, because I didn't think that their arguments were that compelling.
Just to clarify, it's illegal to pay for organs, right?
Illegal? So far. But there's a strong push to change that.
What about how often
I'm one of those people that think that it should be legal, believe it or not.
Halachically speaking, is that
You didn't worry about Dina Lachus Adina. Alpidin, and this is not a topic at all. It's okay. So, an argument could be made that even though it's not a virtuous thing to do, right, but it's Mikaratin going to be okay. Because there are going to be other examples of where you're doing something Shalom Shema. It's kind of like that. In other words, like, you should be giving your kidney because of Tabalayacha. You know, that saved the guy's life. I'm really doing it because I want to get $50,000 depending on who's ripping you off or what's going on with it, right? So is that person Russia? Well, yeah, maybe he's not doing a very nice thing, but he might even be Mekayef. But Moshe has a chuba, he might even still be Mekayef. Although Tabalayacha, he's doing what's up. Even though his motivation is there. Unless he's such a sick person that I hope when you get a kidney, you die, or something like that. You know, short of that, he, even though his primary motivation is the money, and Rav Moshe talks about this by bone, by blood, by bone marrow, by blood, by donating that for money, that's where he has the tshuva. He says, nevertheless, that's still outside of him. That's always outside
of him. Donating
blood. Only the six people don't have the idea of, oh, I'm also helping someone.
You're pro
buying organs?
Here's the rule. Let me clarify that. What I mean by that is, I'll tell you the truth. I haven't drawn a definitive conclusion yet, but I'm thinking about it. I was always viscerally disgusted, right? As you should be, right? As we all are, right? It's disgusting. And there's a problem. Hold on. Well, I need a super rationalist over here. No, here's one. I'll give you good news. Number one, what it would lead to, possibly, here's one of the major points of contention, is who would be the one selling their organs?
The poor people.
Who are the ones that are getting the organs? The rich people. That would be nice.
It's a problem.
Yeah, okay, so now. You talk about saving lives. So that's why that's the second option. About saving 1,000 rich lives for 2 poor lives.
Okay.
It's at no one's expense.
Okay, believe it or not, I agree with you up to a point. Meaning that, in other words, I've now spoken to many, many people involved in this, in the real debate over whether this, you know, there's a real current debate on what to do about this. And there's this very, very strong lobby to legalize it. And the reason is because the bottom line, despite all the negatives, we'll be saving more lives if we do that than if we don't. That's the threshold. So you have to think about that. It's not so much. That's why, especially after I went through the halacha on this, the halacha left room for it, right? So what am I doing? You know, because of my visceral reaction, I'm disgusted by people that would do that, right? In other words, they're not willing to donate unless you pay them a lot of money. That's basically what it is. But they're willing to donate to get the money. So you're really willing to donate, just donate, right? What are you being such a jerk, right? Taking advantage of people. But then I say, at the end of the day, so this is one where the ends might justify the means, because really no one's getting hurt, people are just doing ugly things. And more lives are saved. It's a compelling argument. I've not drawn a full conclusion on it, because I have to explore it, I'll dig a little more. But I hear that argument. Just resonates. You know what it resonates most? I'm sitting there with a kid who's about to die, waiting for a heart, and I'm saying, my God, he's waiting for a heart. And, well, that's not a good example, because people can't, they won't do much with the money if they gave up their heart. But I know the feeling of saying, it's really the renal guys that have it the most. Kidneys is really the biggest. They have someone who's dying of kidney failure, and the only thing that's stopping this kid from getting a kidney is a long waiting list, or this person. And they know, and they're willing to pay, and they could, it'll be alive. You know, it's hard to be thinking in principle when you've got a person about to die on you. It shades the colors of the whole discussion. It should be, now wait a second. Did the Medical Ethics Society have that topic? Didn't somebody give a talk on that topic? Did anybody do something like that? He did it for contemporary halacha. I didn't listen to it yet, but I know that Rabbi Rechman, Dr. Rechman, did this topic, selling and donating organs for contemporary halacha.
That was a lot.
Yeah,
like we're doing it again this year.
Okay,
this
yeah. It's very hot. It's very hot. Yeah, it's
very bright.
Yeah. Okay. So, how does transplant really work?
You mentioned before about assistance. You said one good question. I agree that it's definitely worth. My question was, didn't we have a king in class called that he was crazy and cast more so
he he tried to kill himself first. Right. Messed up.
We're not doing this topic now, but it's part of it. If you want to do this topic, we can throw it in. It's a whole topic. Yes.
No recording.
Actually, he's right. We're going to be doing it next week. Let's finish it. Actually, we can do it today. It's in your handout that I'm going to give you. Shower. Right in here. Isn't that great? You'll see. We're going to talk all about it. But let's finish this. So, we might need to get started. We really will get started.
Yeah.
So here we go. Transplant works as follows. I was telling you, if you look at this printout from the computer screen, here is a list, right? And I told you that it works by zones and then by priority. So who goes on the list? Anyone who needs an organ, I want you to notice, most people, this is going to be important for the Matthias, they often need multiple organs. You see in the middle column over there. Something WL organ, right? Waiting list organ. So it's heart, liver or lung, kidneys, various organs people need. And a lot of people need more than one. And people donate more than one at a time. So you get on this list, you're higher up, the closer you are. First thing is proximity in location. So that's the zones. So the closer you are to the donor, the higher you're up on the list automatically, no matter how sick or anything else. Right? So a person in zone A, who's at the bottom of the zone A list, takes priority over the other zones who could be sicker. You know that? You hear that? So there could be a guy who's like on death's door, but if he's out of the zone, he's going to get behind the guys in the close zone. Within a zone, it's listed by how long you've been on the list, how severe you are. Are you on pressors, which they almost always are? Are you on some kind of assist device? Everyone knows about this, you know, that does. Left ventricular assist, these are machines that are keeping you alive, like being on a bypass machine. Right? That will put you really high up. Right? In various modalities and various levels of illness, I have people that are on the list that are walking around fully functioning, right? But they're low on the list because they have cardiomyopathy, let's say, which is a very sick heart. But they're functional. It's an amazing thing what the heart can do. Their hearts become like gigantic balloons, like this. So the stroke volume, everyone knows what stroke volume is? Stroke volume is the amount of blood that the heart pumps out per pump. So they have this massively dilated heart. So all they need, and the heart's moving like this. You can barely see it moving. You look at this, you do an ultrasound on this person, you say, they must be dead, because it's like, not moving at all. But just when it's that big, just a little squeeze like this pushes out enough blood to keep them alive. So they're not that sick, they're going to be waiting. They could go like that for a year or so. Ultimately, the list is made, and a person is declared brain dead. Here's the part that's really important. So how does a person get their name as accepting a heart? How do you go on as accepting, making the decision to accept? So it works simultaneously, meaning they will send out, there'll be a brain dead person in location A. It will now send out word to all the centers that have people waiting, listed. Right? And it'll say, we have this heart, it'll describe the donor. Now the donor, the information is, that was what I was telling you, is incredible detail what they tell you about the donor. I tell you how many tattoos, was the person a prostitute, did they frequent prostitutes, did they use drugs? Every little detail you can get about their life to sort of classify the donor.
Is it just
how old they are, how big they are, all these things.
Is it just used for classification, or is it used to weed out?
No, it's used, it's up to the center to make the decision, because what happens, it becomes a little bit of a chess game. You say to yourself, I have this guy, if he's really on death's door, right, you're going to be very willing to take what they can get, right? The guy you think is going to die the next day, you're not going to play around. The guy you think is going to make it a little longer, you'll be more discerning in what you'll pick, more discriminating.
Is it really relevant, like, if he is, like, an immoral person, like, if he's using, like...
Could be. In other words, like, let's say I have a guy, one of these guys I was just telling me about, that can go a whole year. So, and then I, you know... Do I want to take any chances at all with a guy like that? Probably not. I'm likely to get another shot at it. Right? The only reason it would come down to me, in other words, here's the other cheshbon they're making. The only way this heart would get to me is if they're all rejecting me because they know
something's wrong
with it. They're all feeling that way. So if it's like at that high risk, I'm going to hold off. Right? So simultaneously, everybody gets the offer. You say yes or no. That's the last column. See all the X's? I told you, this guy had a bad heart, this was a bad heart. Everybody's saying no. All the way to the zones on the bottom. Right? So the entire list is rejecting this heart. That usually means that it could have been like I got the age cutoff for the highest for donating. But you know, you're getting a guy in his 40s nowadays already, and you're worried about cardiovascular disease. Right? They don't ask the donor to, you know, make sure that his coronaries are open before he's donating his heart. So you can end up getting a really bad heart. So even age could be a big factor in making people reject. But the important point for our purposes is simultaneously you say yes or no. Do you know if your yes is going to get you the heart?
No.
Absolutely not. You have no clue. It's random. It's not random. It's going to work by the yeses and the noes in the sequence. But when you say yes, you are not. I'm pressing this point because you're going to see it's going to be very important. You say yes, you may, that heart's coming out, have nothing to do with you. You're saying yes to a global question, right? And you're putting yourself on as I'm taking it, and you may or may not, you have nothing to do with what's going to happen after that.
Well, I don't understand. Okay, whatever organization that is in charge of all of the organs, and
you know,
now gets it, yeah, you know.
United Network of Donor Share.
Okay, so an organ comes in now. They just send out a notification to all hospitals, or like they go zone by zone?
It's computerized.
It goes to everyone.
Goes to all the zones simultaneously, because as soon as everybody says no, They want to get this done quick, right? They have a guy, a willing donor. You don't really dally on a willing donor.
Look who is the closest.
The willing donor is going to change his mind. So what you do is you say, you get the donor, you get the information, you shoot it into the computer, it goes out across the country, right? All these different centers. And then this is what comes out. They have an hour to respond. They don't respond there, it's an hour, right? Within that hour, everybody's responding, yes or no. And then somebody's going to get it, depending on, take out the no's, the highest yes is the winner.
Based on credibility.
Right. So now wait.
Sounds like a pudding.
Now we got to go to step two. Here's where things become a problem, right? So if I ended right here, I would say this person's doing nothing wrong, for sure. He's not goren ritzicha, right? That's what we're looking for. Is any way the person who's on the list causing this death to occur? Is he doing anything? At this point, absolutely not, right? It's clear he's not. However, if you turn the page, right? Actually, if you turn the page, you see Rabbi, this is Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was asked point blank, is it murder or accessory to murder for the person who's receiving it? He says very emphatically not. And he gives the explanation. The law that murder is absolutely forbidden only implies that in this case, I mean the third paragraph, where an act of murder is committed, even if it is for the purpose of saving a human life, one is not allowed to participate in that act either directly or even as a causative factor. However, in a case of heart transplant or a liver transplant, the donor does not in any way participate either directly or as a causative factor, gorim, in the act of removing the heart or the liver from the pregnant patient. Then he goes on, this is very cute, unfortunately under the permissive utilitarian climate prevailing in modern society, doctors are determined to remove the heart or the liver from the brain dead patient, regardless of the identity of the donor. They don't know and they don't want to know who the donor will be, whether a certain potential donor puts his name on the list or not. The heart or the liver is removed, and the brain dead patient killed anyway, right? So, the way Rav Aaron is looking at it, and Rabbi Gleich, by the way, agrees with this, says the same kind of thing, and Alpia Shmua, I don't see it in writing, but I've heard, but Yoshev agreed with this also. And up to this point, clearly, there is no accessory to murder at all.
There so what if all the non-Jews find out?
You say any non-Jews?
No. What if all non-Jews find out that all Jews are not allowed to donate, but they're allowed to accept all of our organs? What happens?
I'll tell you what happened to me happens. I told you this story. Now, what happens is, I told you this story about a 15-year-old.
No.
Come on. I'm getting confused with who it has the rest of it. I did tell you. We're going to revisit this point. I'll tell you the story right now, but we're going to revisit your question. Because that's going to come at the end. But what happened to me, I definitely told you, and I'll remind you. There was this kid who was dying, who I had to convince that it was okay to accept the heart. He was convinced, his family was very yeshivish family, and they were convinced that across the board, our transplants are us, are giving, receiving. They weren't thinking, they didn't know anything. They just knew in the world of discussion and debate, on Shabbos afternoons, or whatever it is, you know, oh, we really, from people, don't get involved in our transplants. So I said to the parents and to the kid, who was incredibly depressed, that you're crazy and you're wrong. And make a long story short, did I tell you the story?
No.
So I got to tell you the full story.
Yes.
All right. It's a good one, because it's a good one. It's one of the happy stories.
You mix this up.
You're telling us students.
I told them also. But so this kid, I used to visit him. I was a fellow, meaning I was not yet an attending cardiologist. I was the guy really working at this point. I mean, I was in the ICU 2 hours time, and like the attending had abandoned this patient. The attending was a fantastic doctor who almost never loses patients, but lost. Couldn't deal with it, and like abandoned them. This is something you should never do. You know, he didn't actually abandoned him to the point of being taken to court, but he just wasn't involved anymore. He wasn't helping the family through this. And part of the job is, if you see that medical therapy is not going to work, you're still supposed to take care of your patient. You have to help them through the rough times. So I took it upon myself, because I saw he was not doing it, I was going to help them out, thinking all along that for some reason he wasn't a transplant candidate. That was my havamina going in. I said, oh, everyone's letting him die. he must not be viable for some reason for Jerusalem. He would end up in Aleph. I said, they need support to make it through this until the kid dies. And I remember talking to the kid in China. He was the most impressed person I've ever seen in my life. His first thing, I'm never going to graduate high school. I'm never going to go to Israel. I'm never going to get married. I'm never going to have kids. The whole list, everything that a person looks forward to doing in their life, he's telling me he's never going to do. So what do you say to him? I said, no. I said, don't think about that. We're going to pull through this. I was vague and, stretching the truth as much as possible just to give him a chizuk. Then one day I find out, I finally asked. I said, what's the deal? Why are we listing this kid? Oh, because the family won't do it. They're not interested in it. That's the reason we're not listing him? So I go running back to the family. And this time when I came back, I spoke to the kid. The parents weren't there. Remember this. I had this conversation. I said, listen to me. You're going to get married. You're going to have kids. You're going to have a full life. You're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. You're going to do all those things. This time I said it with a lot of conviction. Because when you're talking about it, it's like totally depressing all my attention. I said, no, because we're going to give you what we want. He said, no, we can't. Get the parents and say, you have to take a heart, Jim. You have to list them right away and get them a heart. But it's us, sir. It's not us, sir. I go, who's your posting? But Tuffy finds me. Tuffy finds me. Are you kidding me? I got him on the phone within the hour, put him on with them. He told them, of course you're allowed to accept the heart. Right? Boom, boom, boom. I'm saying that what usually happens at this point when you get a family that acquiesces after saying no. So usually at this point, the transmen people, like who are like knights in shining armor, come flying in with the greatest enthusiasm in the world. What happened in this case? No one's like moving. And I'm noticing a terrible, terrible difference between their normal reaction to hearing that somebody's acquiescing to get a transplant. And now, so I found out the head of the transplant is a good friend of mine. I'm not sure, which I go over to her and I say, what's going on? Why aren't you enthusiastic? Yeah, I see you going through the motions, but you're not coming in there, talking to the family, telling them how great it's going to be, you know, they usually do. So she told me, she said, well, I'll tell you the truth, because we know that Orthodox people take and don't give. That hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm saying to myself, number one, I think, you know when I told you this guy's the story, he's an usually when I talk about pikuach nefesh and I talk about the reason that you're allowed to be machal Shabbos ultimately for non-bnei bris is because we're worried about sakanas nefashos for Jews, right? And if we don't take care of them, the eva is going to be so great that it's going to be a real life-threatening thing. Now people are cynical. Oh yeah, sure. And I always cite this case because this is a dramatic example of that. What do you think I did? I right away got all the whole material like a basket. I became the biggest advocate. I told you, right? Eschatayim maskiriyim. I lied through my teeth. I'm holding, like, let's say, the middle sheet that it's a suffix right now. I became the biggest advocate for Rabbi Tendler's approach of anyone ever. Then I went up to him and I told him, here, and I gave them article after article. No, it's not true. We're definitely into it. They have to know that. So yes, the answer to your question is, it's very important that they should never get that idea. Absolutely. And if that, you know, I wasn't totally lying. I was lying on my personal opinion, but as far as they knew, they should definitely be thinking that we give as much as we take. Otherwise, it becomes the fascists. I thought I had no problem. Oh, so here's what happened. So what happens, and this doesn't always happen, but he went immediately to the top of the list, right? He was very, very sick. We gave him 48 hours. Right? And then there was the fight became, should we intubate him? He wasn't intubated. But sometimes when someone's very tenuous, if you intubate them, you kill them. So here became a doses shot, but we're about to get into it. Here's this guy a doses, he's probably a doses. But I need to intubate him or he's going to die. So here I am, a schnooky little third-year fellow, meaning I'm training. Okay, I was senior, but I was still a schnook compared to the attendings. And all the attendings saying, we can't intubate him. I insisted on being intubated. You know, because I thought he was going to die anyway, and that you go with the Shema and the Bari on this. And the Bari's on this. I said, you got to go. So we debated him, and he made it through for another 72 hours. Got a heart. Unbelievable. Got a heart. He went on to fully recover, come out, went to Eretz Yisrael for 2 years. He's married. He's on his third kid. I've been to his wedding, the Bris of the kids. I never danced as much as I danced at this guy's class, you can imagine. And he smiles. Oh, now I know I did his MTA. The Musa I was teaching MTA was the importance of being happy. right? And how it is to appreciate the positive parts of life. And I said, I want to bring this guy in for show and tell. Remember how depressed he was when I described you as the most depressed being? Now he's the happiest. He smiles from ear to ear all the time. He's so content. Why? He's somebody who appreciates every single moment of life. It's unbelievable. To him, it's so precious. And all those things that he thought he would never get to do, Baruch Hashem, he's ended up doing. It's a very happy ending. It doesn't always go that way, but this is one of my favorite stories because he's a walking model of appreciation for the sort of simple living aspects of life.
What's his life expectancy in?
Now? So,
what's a general word?
Right, so it goes like this. They work in terms of 5-year survival and 10-year survival. So right now it's better than ever, and the 5-year survival was, and it depends on the age at transplant. So like 95% 5 years, something close to 90, 10 years, and everything relates to compliance, meaning if a person's compliant, then it's very, very hard in the beginning. Once a person gets a transplant, you gotta go through a lot. There's a lot of invasive testing, you have to have a biopsy. A biopsy means they have to catheterize you, take a alligator-like looking device that goes into your heart and takes out a chunk. So they have to go through that fairly frequently in the beginning. So the first year is very difficult. They take about 50 medications, and they can't get sick, and you gotta be really worried about infections and being exposed to people. First year is very miserable, but it gets better after that. If you make it through with compliance, and now this guy also became super compliant. He was like unbelievable. They love him now. It's so ironic. The one that they were like anti-Orthodox people, this guy now is a walking Kiddush Hashem. The transplant people love him. He's like their favorite patient. He's the most compliant. A guy like him, easy to say 20 years easy. The only thing that waits, that you can't do anything about, is something called chronic rejection, which is even if you're covering the acute rejection with cyclosporin A and various medications, what no one has developed a way to defend against is over time the coronaries become clogged up chronically. And a lot of the hearts fail after 20, now we're first seeing because we have patients that far out, right? It hasn't been that long that we've had that many that far out. Around that time, all of them are rejected chronically. So we have one guy that's on his 30th year because he got a second heart. So if you keep doing it, it's a little indefinite. The idea is to do it long enough, there'll be something that'll take the place, and there'll be some innovation, stem cells, something that's gonna keep it going forever. So right now, I would say it's a very viable option. No one should have the attitude. I told you, some of my older colleagues are still living 10, 20 years ago, and they think it's a miserable choice, don't even offer them that choice. They're better off dead. Right? They make that decision. Right? So you're an idiot. You're not that. I don't think you're better off dead. They're thinking, oh, but he has to have the biopsy. Oh, that's okay. For a year or so, he's going through that. After that, it becomes once a year. There's other non-invasive ways of monitoring. It's definitely, in my opinion, 1,000% could die to go for it if you're in my position.
You asked before whether or not any way to say that is whether or not that guy that he murdered something. He definitely is, because if we're saying that only that's for us to donate his fellow's name, right?
Say again?
The only heifer for us to donate is fellow's name, right?
Yeah. To donate? In this case, you can't donate because it's murder.
Yeah. No. Let's say I want a signing card, right? I can only do it if I have fellow's name. In other words, if it's a Jew that's...
It should be used for some other question.
Yeah. If there were no Jews on the list, and I knew that, then I wouldn't be able to donate. Right?
I'm not saying that that's true, but I don't want to talk about it. That's going to open up a whole tangent, right?
No,
he says, and it's in, if you want another paragraph that you should just key in on the first column, the last paragraph, he basically says what I just said. He says, once a guy's picked, you can read it on your own, once a guy is picked, he should have to say no, because if he says yes, the guy dies an hour or two sooner than he would. Isn't that awesome? That's a shame. Yeah. So how do we respond to this? Is he right? Some people will say, yeah, he's right. Rabbi Tendler. A lot of the advocates, it's interesting, I don't like the fact that it's the advocates of brain death that see it one way, and the non-advocates that see it the other way. That's a little too convenient.
What is it?
What can we do?
Yeah, someone's going to die in
2 hours. The question is,
in other words, am I doing something wrong? I put myself on a list totally and you said legitimately. Putting on the list was okay. That's why I purposely set it up that way, because that's the truth. Now you got selected, right? So now what's going to be the sequence of events? Once you're selected and you match, your team sent to the donor's location, and once that team is there, right? And by the way, I'll tell you, that's in theory the way it's supposed to work. They're not supposed to, if you ask officially, they're not supposed to take the heart out and do anything until the team is there. I'm not so sure that that's what reality always happens. I think they start going even before, but now let's just assume they do it right, the way they say they're supposed to do it, which is when the team arrives. And by the way, let's say there's a liver going to Seattle and a heart going to Nevada. All the teams got to be there. So all the teams got to be there. Yes, they don't do anything until all the teams are there. Once all the teams are there, that's almost the way out of this problem. But nevertheless, if one team backs out, they pick a new recipient. Is that going to waste the heart? In other words, the heart's coming out. Here's what it comes down to. These guys are taking out this heart no matter what. They are going to kill him, one way or the other. Or if they weren't, they're going to take the tube out and kill him that way. That's what Shlomo Zalman writes. Either way, the heart's coming out. If you accept it, it's going to happen an hour or so sooner than if you say no now. You understand?
So are you chayav now to give up your life? Because you know that if you get picked, that this is going to happen.
Right, that's the question.
So you can't even put yourself on the list.
That's the shot.
In that case, you should also not be able to take a kidney out, because if the person has a kidney...
Maybe you're saving someone whose heart's getting taken out also.
Exactly.
Right, that's interesting. You can take this argument in many places. Is it true? Is this true? So again, some people say yes. That's a bottom line, inescapable truth. That you're a murderer or accessory to murder if you get yourself into this situation. Shlomo Zalman wrote, not true. So if you turn, this one I want to show you inside.
So how...
Page 10.
Just really quick, how is that different from... I asked about the New Orleans case, where during the hurricane...
The
woman that decided to go around and she decided to kill people. They were going to die. We're going to die anyway in a few hours. She decided to kill them. So I mean, aside from the fact that they weren't, because they're not getting anything from, they're not saving any lives by killing them.
No,
at the same time,
that's a big difference.
It's a big difference, but at the same time, you're still killing. So like, how?
Number two, it's. Was it voluntary in those cases?
What's the story?
This is voluntary.
No, it definitely wasn't.
They didn't ask you to kill me sooner. She thought she was doing a nice thing. all right. Look at the way Shlomo Zalman, this is really intriguing to me. Here is the exact response, word for word, Shlomo Zalman to this question. You have to be really careful. I have to read it with you because... the details are very important. Watch how he works this. So I'm starting. He starts off with a very interesting notion. Remember, he's one who did not accept Rabbi Tendler's definition of death, right? He didn't accept it. He was close. He always seemed close. But at the end, this is a question on the test. What was the make it or break it for Shlomo Zalman? Why did he and Rabbi Yosef say, basically, even if you were correct, we can never implement your definition. Gosei's problem, right? They said, look, as soon as you have a Gosei and you start doing the imaging test, you're going to be disturbing the Gosei, which you're not allowed to do, so it's a catch-22. But, you know, lurking in the background of that response was, well, but otherwise they agree, right? Otherwise they might be accepting, at least coming very close to accepting, in theory, this is Rabbi Tendler plays this up a lot. Right? You know, if you listen to Rabbi Tendler, he loves to say, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman agrees with me. Like everybody agrees with him. This is why. But he doesn't quite. What he does say, and this is what he says in the first paragraph, is although Yesh Gam Nefak the King, the Choshishin, there are many people that are, including him, that are not completely enamored with the approach to brain death, Akoponim Safek Hakarov Levada. It's very important. He's willing to grant it's a very slim Safek. In other words, I'm in the paragraph that begins, Lachen Hineni Choshev. She'im Harofim Yekayim Viyasu is Hazrikos. He's saying, if the Rofim really do what Rabbi Tendler says, do those imaging studies. Zrikos means the injections. I will grant that if you show conclusively the way Rav Tamla described, that there is no circulation going to the brain and that you're completely cut off in communication to the rest of the body, I'll agree that that is Hutaz Rosho, or at least the case of Eli, Nishvara Mefarakdan Shilzakin Nechashit Kemes Gam Li Rov Vassar. He accepts that argument. He says, well, you know, you're right, that was a Ryan that Rabbi Tamla had, that was a good one. Eli was dead and his neck wasn't completely cut off. He just had a severance of communication. So he says, I'm willing to accept it. There are some people that, like Rabbi Bleich and others, that still won't buy this at all. That everybody has to admit that under Rabbi Tender's conditions, it's a suffix, a karav levada, which means it's a doubt, but it's very slim. It's almost certainly that he's right. You hear that? This is an amazing, sort of admission. Milu, however, what was stopping him from going all the way? Kosei's problem. He's stopped by the fact that we just don't have a way of proving it. He might also have been swayed by the contemporary argument that I told you last time, by the way. Shlomo Zalman was not aware. Everybody accepted the medicine facts, according to Rabbi Tamla. That was like, everyone's accepting. Could be that based on the new data that we never show at all by our imaging techniques, that there's complete severance. Is an important part that's also going to be on the test, right? Remember the last point I made when we finished framing that discussion? That contemporary medicine doesn't have an imaging modality that's done at the bedside that can really prove this all to you. So he might have accepted that too. But needless to say, he's saying it's even with whatever we got, even just Harvard criteria, at the end he's going to say it's likely that this person's dead. The person who has a failed apnea test, Rav Shlomo Zalman is going to admit, I just can't say it for sure because I don't have Makoros, but I'll tell you, it's a Sufik Karav Levada that is really dead. So that's, he's going to give me a whole slew of arguments to bring together to be making. Argument number one is this, that in truth, this guy that's being declared brain dead, we're not willing to say that you're allowed to chafi to do it, but they're doing it anyway, and I'll tell you the truth, it's likely that he's dead. Right? Likely that he's dead. That's going to be a sniff knockout. It's going to be put into the ultimate psak to generate a very lenient outcome. It's not enough. Because then he says this. He says, of course, also another factor that we have to realize is whatever I'm going to tell you as a hector is only going to be true in Chutz La'aretz, where most of the people are not neighbors. Why should that make a difference? Right, here's where he introduces it. If it's murder, it's murder. Right? Why should it make a difference? Jew, not neighbors. So we'll see how he explains it. Right? That should be bothering us already. Right? He, in the next few sentences, introduces this idea. So fact number one was, we're very close to accepting Rabbi Tamla's thing. It's Safek Karav Levada. Fact number two is, at least in Chutz La'aretz, we're dealing with rove non-neighbors. Right? I still have to explain why that should make a difference. But he's throwing it in. And number three, he says, for sure we know this guy is going to be killed moments later anyway. Right? So he puts all three of those together. Right?
Why not three?
Number three is, even if you took yourself off the list, they're taking out that heart anyway.
What's
or,
one and three,
if you're the only person, they're going to take the tube out and kill him either way. One is that we're very close to accepting altogether this definition of death. It's a suffix of karav levada. Two is majority non-believers. Three is, even if that little tiny suffix that it's still alive, well, they're going to be killing him anyway, right away, soon after. So he says, I'll put all those three together, it's okay. So I'm reading this, and I'm saying to myself, the first time I read it many years ago, what does this mean? Why should the fact, I understand number one, and I understand number three. I don't understand number two. Where's the clue? So fortunately, if you skip to the next paragraph, Shlomo Zalman himself takes it back. Look what he says. He says, Achshuv hisponanti. He was giving you his old train of thought. Everything we said up till now, forget. He says, I thought about it again. Dema oso atam yishlasur l'chora gam b'chutz la'aretz. He said, wait a second, if I'm going to hold up that it's Aser and Eretz Yisrael, then I really don't have a good argument that it should be mutter in Chutz Laretz. Why? Shaharein, I want to emphasize this. Af hagoy osur lo laharo goy. I cannot facilitate, I cannot be a lifnei iver to have the goyish doctor kill the goyish patient to take his heart. It's just as bad, even for a Jew.
We can say by a Jew, you're not allowed to become a Jew. Like, maybe you can say that since if let's say there was absolutely no risk to the Jew, why not say you couldn't be
Egg by Yahweh? The Jew is being over on Lifnei Iver, right? What? So here's the question. Wait, I want to make sure everybody understands where we're at this. What exactly are we saying is the crime being committed here by the poor Nebuch guy on the list? Does everyone understand what it is? He's not killing anyone with what he's doing is he's setting up a situation that will result in the non-Jewish surgeon killing the non-Jew. So Rav Shlomo Zalman, thank God, I'm so happy to see this, because it was bothering me. Like, is he saying something that I would never want to hear? That we're allowed to, you know, even facilitate the killing of a non-Jew to save a Jew? Would we ever say such a thing? Never. And he's saying that openly, that we're not saying that. He's not saying that at all. That's what everybody was screaming. Oh, he's making a chiluk in Chutz La'aretz, and Eretz Yisrael must be that he's allowing us to kill non-Jews to save Jews. Not saying that. He's not saying that. He's in the forest that he's not saying that. He's even saying less than that. He's saying, lifnei iver of that, you can't do. Right? Because one could argue, everyone understands what lifnei iver means. Lifnei iver means that you're not doing the aveira, but you're putting someone else in the position where they're going to do the aveira. You are not allowed to do averas, and you're not allowed to make other people do averas. Right? Now, there is a separation between chad avred l'nahara and trey avred l'nahara. Anyone know what that means? I'll assume that most of you don't know what it means. I'm going to explain what it means. Very important that you know what it means. When is it true that I'm not allowed to facilitate someone doing an avera? When they're only doing it because of me. In other words, I'm really mamish facilitating it. Trey avred l'nahara. The example is there's a nazir who's not allowed to drink wine. And he's on the other side of the riverbank. Right? There's no wine available on his side of the riverbank. The only wine that's available is on my side of the riverbank. And I pass him over the wine. He's not getting it if I don't give it to him. That's lifnei iver. However, if it's chad avred l'nahara, right? He's on the same riverbank as me, and he has the same access to the wine that I do and can get it on his own. That's not lifnei iver d'oraisa. Right? Everybody hear the difference? That's going to be very important for us. We'll see in a moment how this all works out. So, I am putting myself on a list. I am causing the surgeon to kill this person an hour earlier than he would have otherwise. That's my other. So, I'm not, that's Yarav Le'Yavar according to Rosh Hashanah. By the way, is that Yarav Le'Yavar? Ritzicha is Yarav Le'Yavar, right? What about the love of Lifnei Iver L'Sitem Yisha? Is that Yarav Le'Yavar? Is that one of the big three? This is a famous, famous machlokes Ramban and Ram. So we actually paskin on this in Kula. We say that really, for lifnei iver, it's not yarbudo. However, there's a strong shita that it is, which he seems to be concerned with. Right? There are rishonim that say that you should even have to die, not only for doing the avera tzicha, but even if you're facilitating someone else to do it. So that is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with something that you can argue is not true halacha, even, right? Maybe I don't have to die for lifnei iver. I have to die for killing him, but for lifnei iver, I'm allowed to live. But Rav Shlomo Zalman is going all the way to Chumash, saying that you shouldn't even die for lifnei iver. So you shouldn't kill. You should die. So he says that I will maintain that a Jew in Eretz Yisrael cannot accept the heart because he's going to be facilitating the Jewish surgeon killing arguably a Jew or a non-Jew. I'll tell you that right now. It could be either one. And therefore, you can't do it. However, if you're in Chutz La'aretz and you're a Jew, it is no problem for you to have the non-Jewish surgeon do it to the non-Jewish patient. Or Jewish patient. Right, that's how we're saying. Why? Why should that be different? It's lifnei iver in Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm. It's not lifnei iver in America. Why?
But you say that to a Jewish doctor, that's
In other words, what's happening in Eretz Yisrael? What's missing in Eretz Yisrael? So in Eretz Yisrael, everybody's Jewish, we're assuming. Rome are Jews, all the patients are Jews, the donors are Jews, the doctors are Jews.
For everyone. Here,
in Chutzaritz,
it's
an Avera, Lifneiver applies to non-Jews, meaning, not the Avera Lifneiver. For me, to cause a non-Jew to kill someone is Lifneiver. Right? However, is this Trey Avedanara? Bachal Avedanara. This is clearly Chal Avedanara. That's why he's saying it's going to be done anyway, right? If it's not me, it's the next guy. So why doesn't that work in Israel? Why does it only work in America? Because there's a famous Mishnah Lamela that I gave you just now, that last sheet. This tells you a very significant insight into the way the Chalitza works. You say like this. The Mishnah Lamela was talking, let me tell you the case that he was talking about. To lend or borrow with interest, is that mutter? You're not allowed to borrow, you're not allowed to lend. The Rambam, if you look at this Rambam on the page that's like this, the Rambam page, says that a person who borrows with interest is not only over on with this, he's also over on Lifnei Iver. So, because he's making the Malva do an Avera, right? So comes along the Mishnah Melech, he quotes somebody named Pnei Moshe. Pnei Moshe says, wait a second. If I know that if I don't borrow from him with interest, 10 other guys are going to borrow with interest, shouldn't that be Chad Avedan Hara? And shouldn't it not be Lifnei Iver? Everyone understand the case? Hold it. Does everyone understand the case?
Who says that?
Right? This is the Pnei Moshe quoted by the Mishnah Melech. He says like this. He says, normally the Rambam's telling me that a Lover is not only is he over on Ribbis itself, but he's Lifnei Iver. He's causing the Malva to do an Aveira. So the Pnei Moshe says, what are you talking about? This is not Trey Avedan Hara. This guy's going to be lending with interest to someone else. If not me, he's going to go to the next guy. Shouldn't that be not Lifnei Iver? So it comes along the Shema and says, not true, unless you're living in a totally not Jewish neighborhood. Because it's always going to be considered Trey Avedan Hara, full Lifnei Iver, if the other person also is going to be over on Lifnei Iver, meaning a Jew. If it's you or another Jew doing the Lifnei Iver, then it's like no one else is around. You're the one making him do this. Because nothing's gained. If you're not doing the Lifnei Iver, so the next guy's doing the Lifnei Iver. However, if the other people are not Jews, they don't have an Isser of Lifnei Iver. It's not usher for a non-Jew to do Lifnei Iver. So in that case, then it would be Chad Avedan Hara. So coming back over here, that's where Shlomo Zalman is making his chilul. You have to understand a little. You have to understand a little bit of Hilchos Ribbis. You have to understand that the way Lifnei Iver works, not Ribbis. You have to know a little bit of Lifnei Iver. How Lifnei Iver works. Lifnei Iver again is an issur d'oraisa if it's you and only you causing the guy to sin. If it's potentially other people, that's considered chad avedan hara. It's not the avera of Lifnei Iver. However, if the other people are also going to be over on Lifnei Iver if it's not you, meaning other Jews, and we pass it as like this Mishnah Melech, it's a big chumrah, that's going to always be considered as though each and every one of you is doing full Lifnei Iver, even though there's many other people that could be doing it. However, if the other people are not Jews, then it's not Lifnei Iver, because you go to them, and if they did it, it would not result.
So there's no such transplant system in Israel.
So, in Israel, we're assuming that Rome of the recipients, that's what counts. Rome of the recipients are Jewish. So if it's not me on the list, it's going to be another Jew. That's Lifnei Iver. No matter who the surgeon is, and no matter who the donee is. But in America, most of the people on the list are not the neighbors. They're not worried about Lifnei Iver. So it's Chad Avedan Hara. What do you mean Lifnei Iver? I'm not doing anything. He's going to do it. And therefore, he passed in Chutz Aretz, yes. Eretz Yisrael, no. Simply, it's a very technical halachic issue. He's not making any judgments about race. It's not a racial sock. Right? Everyone makes that big mistake. It annoys me to no end. Because they have no clue what's really going on. It's a purely halachic analysis. Are you doing anything there or not? Okay.
I don't understand, because if you're deriving from the example of rivers where, you know, it's only if there's no other Jews in this town. So it's really not just about a minority of people or chance that it's not Rav. It's really like it has to be pretty much a very, very sure
idea. Rav would care.
But what if you take, you know, a known condensed...
Before you leave me, I'll get your question in a second. I'm not rushing out today. Maybe I just want to give out this hand so you have a chance to look at it. So we'll cleanly start the end of life issues. Next week is...
Jimmy wants to transfer.
Yeah, these are actual transfers. This is the next one.